Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio. From drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between, professional, student, and community productions in and around Montreal, the island also known as Jojage, Nganiagahaga, and Munayang in Anishinaabe, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah DeA, recording from home on Thursday, July 7th, 2022. On tonight's show, Circus Shakespeare Arts Funding. My guests, Carmen Ruiz of Création Virago on her new circus show, Barca, for Montréal Complètement Cirque.
One of the things that are very particular about our creative process and the way we see art is that we like closeness and we invite people to move, to touch, to look at each other in the eyes, you know? And so the pandemic was really hard for us in that sense.
Repercussion Theater Artistic Director Amanda Kellogg brings a new Shakespearean tale with a pandemic wink to your local park.
It's so fascinating to go back through Shakespeare's plays, thinking about them through the lens of someone living through a pandemic. And the reality is his entire life was spent in the shadow of the plague. There's something comforting about that. Like, oh, right, this has happened before. There's also something really disquieting about that. Like, oh, no.
And meet Barry Cole, whose foundation gives out some $500,000 to theater companies in Montreal every single year.
Because theater gives you the experience of intimacy of situations which you don't normally have in your own private life. Your next door neighbor really doesn't talk about seeing the significant issues in his life. But when you go to a play, you'll see the significant issues of a character. And that's what I enjoy doing. And that's why I like to go to theater.
Et maintenant, place au cirque. I was at the launch of Montréal Complètement Cirque, the circus festival at La Tohue in Saint-Michel last night. You know I love circus and I get so excited for this festival every July. There's a rich and extensive programming this year with lots of ticketed indoor shows from around the world, as well as free performances down at Saint-Denis, including a new outdoor show called Three Giants. There's also performances happening in different neighborhoods as well, including the traveling show, which goes to different neighborhood parks over the course of the next week and a half. I caught a brand new spectacle called Après la Nuit, directed by Benoît Landry and performed by Nord Nord-Est with musical trio Chances from Montreal. The band is set up in the middle of the circular venue inside La Tohue, and the acrobats are moving all around. So a whirlwind of sky-high acrobatics, live music, dance with swirls of plant life and macrame-like ornamentation hanging from the ceiling, if you can imagine that. Après la Nuit runs until July 16th at La Tohue. And one of the other shows happening at the festival headquarters at La Tohue in Saint-Michel is under the Big Top, just outdoors next to the actual venue of La Tohue. The show is called Barca, and it is a new creation from Création Girovago, which is an interdisciplinary company founded in 2013, nearly 10 years ago, by partners in art and life Carmen Ruiz and Juan Sebastian Mejia, artists originally from Colombia. Carmen is a dancer. She arrived in Montreal nearly 20 years ago from the city of Cali on the west coast of Colombia. Their company also operates Gypsy Cumbia Orchestra, an infectiously energetic musical group that is part of the Cumbiero movement. Cumbia being a style of Latin music with roots in Colombia and influences from African, indigenous, and European styles. Listen to this sampling from the orchestra here. You can hear maracas, accordions, brass, Afro-Colombian percussion, and Balkan melodies and drums. It's all there. Carmen and Juan Sebastian's new show, Barca, brings together Gypsy Cumbia Orchestra with circus and dance performance. inviting us all into a big boat that will weather an oncoming storm. I spoke with Carmen Ruiz yesterday, hours before her show was set to launch at La Tohu. Welcome to Upstage, Carmen. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thanks for having us. We're very excited to be talking about Barca today.
Tell me about Barca. How did this begin?
Yeah, it's been a long journey. It actually began a few years ago. It was like a parallel process to the creation of the second album of the band Gypsy Cumbia Orchestra. And because of the pandemic, like, we couldn't present it when it was supposed to be presented in April 2020. So we are revisiting this show with like a new energy, with everything that we've learned. So much more deep into the artistic vision that was initially intended with the show. And yeah, it's an amazing, for me, it's been an amazing journey creating with so many talented artists and with such an amazing music. And now being able to present it in this context, we're very excited about it.
Carmen, can you tell me about the relationship with Gypsy Cumbia Orchestra? How does Girovago and the orchestra come together?
Actually, Gypsy Cumbia Orchestra is created by Girovago. So Sebastian and I, who are both founders of Girovago, L'Artan Mouvement, we are also responsible for initiating such an amazing group of artists and what the music it's been and what it's been for the scene, the independent scene here in Montreal and elsewhere. So Gypsy Cumbia Orchestra is one of our main creative children, if we can say that.
Yeah. Offspring of your creative process. So where does the circus begin and where does the band start? Or like at this point, is it kind of impossible to untangle the two?
I think so. It's pretty impossible to untangle the two. I think our creative process is always being inspired and informed by interdisciplinarity. I'm a dancer, originally a dance artist. Sebastian is more of a musician, but we're both being fascinated by the magic and the fantasy that the circus brings, you know, and how it makes possible what we think impossible, which is also something that, you know, in our creative vision, we wanna share with people, and in this idea that we can reinvent how we are in society, how we can reinvent what comes next in history. I think the circus, the idea of the impossible being possible, it's very informative. So we always wanted to work with the three disciplines together, and with Barca, I think we're getting into that. And the music, the circus, the dance, it all goes together very much in this show in Barca. Yeah.
If we can move away from Barca for a second, I was curious to know for yourself as a dancer originally, you know, how did you come to be at the helm of an organization that brings together so many different kinds of disciplines, music and circus and dance? How did you decide that you were going to be not just a dancer, but to be running this company, Girovago, with Juan Sebastian?
Yeah, well, I think it was also the fact that we met, Sebastian and I, and we studied long time ago with other friends. We used to work together with a collective that was called the Barefoot Salsa, and it was very much about music, dance, and popular education, sharing with people. So I don't know, it's been a long journey. Sebastian and I were partners, creative partners, but we're also partners in life. So I think it just happened to be that things come together. And And I'm not a trained musician, but as a dancer, I feel that this is how we make music, right? With the body. It's a whole dialogue, a whole conversation, but it's been definitely a deep learning process, because musicians, dancers, circus artists, we all have our own specificities and the way we talk, or the way we understand music and movement and seeing, like, the, you know, like the mise-en-scene, it's very different. And so it's an interesting process of learning how to explain things to one another, how we communicate things to one another to create this harmony on stage.
It's so well put. That is the voice of Carmen Ruiz, who is the co-artistic director of Girovago Creations, Girovago, which is set to present their new circus. Well, it's not quite so new. You've been developing it since a little bit before the pandemic, Barca, happening now at the Montréal Complètement Cirque Festival. I've heard you referred a little bit at the beginning about, you know, the journey that the process has taken, because you were set to present shortly after the pandemic started. And of course, that kind of scuttles your plans. And over the course of, like, lockdown and, you know, a tentative return to live performance, a lot of projects have taken on different shapes or become richer as people have gotten more time to work on them and develop them and, you know, spend more time rehearsing them. Is that quite the experience that you had with Barca?
Yes, I mean, we, since we got the offer from Tohu, we have been working on it. So it's been kind of like during this year that we have been able to revisit this show. One of the things that are very particular about our creative process and the way we see art is that we like closeness, and we invite people to move, to touch, to look at each other in the eyes, you know. And so the pandemic was really hard for us in that sense. It's like everything that we've been, you know, trying to make people do and what we have based our art on, you know, it was not allowed. We were not allowed to get close. We were not allowed to touch. So it was very challenging, like in the spirit for sure. And so we hadn't visited the show itself, but I think that when we started thinking about this show, we were really inspired by or moved by the urgency of acting for our planet and, you know, kind of like being aware of what we need to do to be able to continue this journey on this Barca, which is our Mother Earth. And in that sense, I think that everything that we've gone through has made the show grow. But we've been doing an intensive creative process over the past 3-4 months, you know, like within, yeah, 4 months, like this year, basically, when we got the offer from Tohu. So it's an old story that has grown in our spirits for a long time, but it's very fresh, it's very renewed, and it's very, it has all that strength, you know, that comes with the challenges that we've had over the past couple of years.
Yeah, tell me about the story you want to tell in Barca, because it's a very rich and deep one.
Yeah, well, it's a metaphor. We think it's a metaphor of our Barca, of our planet, and we're all in it. And what can we do to not get, you know, destroyed by the storm? So I wouldn't say anything else except that, you know, like it's a show that brings hope and brings joy and brings a message of the importance of recognizing how we're connected, how we are a big collectivity, and how we are nowhere else to go but our planet, our little Barca. So, yeah.
That is Carmen Ruiz, who is co-artistic director of Création Girovago, getting ready to present Barca et la Tohue as part of Montréal Complètement Cirque. Carmen, what kind of arts can we see on stage? Because you've got music, if you've got dancers, and circus arts, of course, as well. So what disciplines do we get to take in?
Yeah, it's the music. It's very, it's strong, it's festive. It's, as I said, it's we have a show that is hopeful. So you'll see a lot of dances that are inspired by Afro-Colombian folklore, but with a contemporary touch. You'll hear music that goes from influences from the Balkans to Spain, to the Marwa in India. So it's a very diverse, in terms of the musicality, it's very diverse. We have artists, like circus artists, that are doing Chinese pole and juggling and wheels here, and just they're all amazing. They're all absolutely amazing and brilliant. And yeah, come prepared to see a show that is dynamic, diverse, joyful, and hopeful, and colorful. And yeah, and be ready to be dancing yourselves as well.
Tell me, what is something that really excites you about the show? That's something that you get excited for.
Oh, and we're so excited to be doing it at the Grand Chapiteau, like the circus tent. We've always dreamed about our dancing circus, and this is like a dream come true. So we're super excited and super thankful from this opportunity that Tohu has given us. We're going to be there for the full festival, and even afterwards, we're doing 3 more weekends. And it's just great to be able to do it in this setup, you know, with the challenges that it brings. But, it has a spirit that we have always dreamed about. So we're very happy to be doing it there.
What are some challenges that you've experienced being under the big top?
Well, you know, it's just there's challenges, but it's a beauty of it. It's like, mm-hmm. It's less control, say, than when you're when you're in a theater, and you know, like everything is more controlled here. It's like we're in a tent, so if it rains, we'll hear the rain, and you know, when the wind blows, it blows. But it's amazing. It's just like, it's so fantastic to be there. Like, I think it adds to the show very much, because there's also a lot of proximity with the audience. It's beautiful. Yeah. Yeah.
Can you tell me a bit about cumbia, the music genre, and the kind of spirit with that music?
Of course. So everything that I said before about the different, you know, the diverse influences that we have is kind of like the inspirations that go together with this cumbia, which is for us is kind of like our base, rhythmically and also symbolically. Mm-hmm. I am from Colombia. Juan Sebastián Mejía is from Colombia as well. And cumbia music is... it's a specific rhythm, but it involves, or you know, like envelopes, like different, like a different rhythms that come from the Caribbean region in Colombia, so the northern coast. It's a type of music that brings a lot of history, because you know, it's African, is a native Colombian from the First Nations that were there before the Spanish came. And it also has a lot of like European Spanish influences. So it is already a mix, and it's been, we can say that it's kind of like the Latin American music for excellence. Is like it's been popularized in different countries throughout Latin America. Like, you know, there's a, cumbias in Mexico, in the Andes, down in Argentina and Chile. So it's a type of music that has been popularized all throughout Latin America. So it's kind of like we can say a symbol of our culture.
Yeah. It's known around the world.
And it is now, like recently over the past few years, like it's been more and more popularized, and there's so many amazing new artists doing new fusions with the cumbia beat and this kind of like down tempo that makes you connect to the earth. The drumming just brings you down, like roots you, right? And so I think it's for us as immigrants, it's also something that would keep us connected to our own roots. And so that's why it's been part of our creative journey, even before Gypsy Cumbia Orchestra, you know? But then we find it again when we created Gypsy Cumbia Orchestra. And it's also like the main sort of like thread for Barca, and which is our new creation, yeah.
Carmen, thank you so much for taking the time to tell us about Barca, as well as your work with Girovago. Much appreciated.
Yes, thank you so much. And I hope people that listen to this interview are going to come and are going to enjoy this show with us. Thank you for having us.
That was Carmen Ruiz, co-artistic director of Creación Girovago. The company and its musical group, Gypsy Cumbia Orchestra, perform their new show, Barca, at Montréal Complètement Cirque at the Big Top at Le Tohu in Saint-Michel until July 17th. The festival itself has just launched, with shows happening indoors and outdoors until July 17th. The outdoor shows are free, which is pretty sweet. There is also Three Giants, which launches tonight and takes place in three different locations. For more information and to get your tickets, you can visit montrealcompletementcirque.com. I'm Sarah DeA, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Still to come this hour, theaters and artists can cobble together funding from a variety of sources, including fundraising, sponsorships, government funding, as well as artistic grants. So I'll introduce you to a man who got a couple of $1 million to give away to charity every single year. And while his group's work primarily aims to save and improve lives affected by cancer, they also earmark $500,000 for the arts in Montreal. That conversation before the end of the hour. Nothing says summer like Shakespeare in the Park, and Repercussion Theatre is emerging from its pandemic slumber with a brand new show launching a week from tonight, though the pandemic will not be too far off in the rearview mirror. The new play is titled All Shall Be Well. Sounds a little like a twist on the pandemic slogan, Ça va bien aller. And as we learned this week that Quebec might be on the cusp of the seventh wave of COVID, this feels very apropos. At the start of the pandemic back in spring 2020, I spoke to Repercussion Theatre's artistic director, Amanda Kellogg, about the reality that William Shakespeare himself lived through, the plague, which could shutter the theatres and leave him to write for weeks or months at a time at home under Shakespearean lockdown. All Shall Be Well plunders the Bard's canon for plague-related content. Amanda has looked to his plays, his songs, and sonnets to compose this story with input from her creative team. A cast of five performers, Samantha Bitonti, Tiernan Cornford, Anton May, Andrew Joseph Richardson, and Thomas Valliard, will perform under the direction of Rebecca Gibeon as they spend a month touring to parks on and off Montreal Island. It kicks off in Dorval in the West Island on Thursday, July 14th, ending in the Plateau August the 6th. I spoke with Amanda Kellogg earlier this week. Welcome back to Upstage, Amanda. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing so well, and I'm so glad that Repercussion is back.
I know, it's so exciting. Yeah, it's really exciting.
How does it feel to be producing this year?
Oh, man, I mean, how does it feel to be alive this year? It's so strange. The world is just such a wild place right now. But it's really exciting to be, creating this particular show, which is very much of this moment. And it's really exciting to be out in the park and playing and you know, watching actors discover things. And it's just a joy to be making theater and to be, you know, thinking about seeing audiences soon. It's a lot of good stuff and a lot of challenges as well, dealing with COVID cases in the team, dealing with higher prices, dealing with everything taking longer. Lots of hills to climb, but also lots of joy on the horizon too.
You just mentioned rising prices and shortages of things. And I don't think we talk about that enough, that, you know, everything is more expensive nowadays. And it's also hard to get your hands on things. And that, of course, naturally affects the theater business.
Oh, big time. And all of my colleagues that I talk to as well, they're sort of, you know, going, wow, the pandemic was nothing. This is the hard part, actually, is trying to come out of this thing. It's really wild. And I mean, our gas budget, for our vehicles just sort of keeps climbing. It's an eye-opening experience for sure.
And we don't want to dwell too long on it, but you bringing up the gas bill, I guess that is a particular challenge for Repercussion. Being in Shakespeare in the park, transportation is a key element.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's interesting because, you know, I've spoken with a couple of other touring outdoor theater companies across the country. And one of the things we've kind of realized, and it's something we're trying to quantify this summer, is, you know, the fact that we tour means that our audience sometimes doesn't have to. It means that they don't have to travel as far. They can sort of stay a little bit more local rather than, you know, taking the car into the city to go see theater, depending on where they live. And so one of the things we're trying to do this summer is find out through a survey how people are getting to the park, and if us, you know, traveling there means that they can do less commuting.
Right, because you're in people's neighborhoods.
Yeah.
So that makes it easier.
Yeah, hopefully. That's what we're going to try to find out.
Wow, it's such a puzzle to unpack. One thing that I kept coming to way back in March 2020 was thinking about sickness and health. And, that we'd been through this before, but maybe not as recently in like our living memory, to have this kind of shutdown of the world. But Bill Shakespeare came up because he wrote some plays while there were periods of sickness where he was what we would call under lockdown, right? That kind of threads into what you're doing with All Shall Be Well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I became like so obsessed with thinking about Shakespeare and the plague when this pandemic first started. And that is the direct impetus and context for this particular show. And it's so fascinating to kind of go back through Shakespeare's plays, thinking about them, you know, through the lens of someone living through a pandemic. And the reality is his entire life was spent in the shadow of the plague. And it's there's something comforting about that, about knowing like, oh, right, this has happened before. There's also something really disquieting about that. Like, oh no, it means it will probably keep happening. But there's certainly something humanizing about it. And it's been really fascinating working with all the other, you know, creatives on the show and just sort of talking through all of it and finding those resonances and just kind of both learning more about and understanding Shakespeare's plays in a different way. And then also having that, you know, allow us to reflect on our own time in a different way as well.
That is the voice of Amanda Kellogg, Artistic Director at Repercussion Theatre, getting ready to launch Shakespeare in the Park 2022 next week, July 14th. So tell me about how you started going about assembling this reworking. Is reworking a good word for that, or reinvention of certain texts? Like, how do you see what you're trying to do?
Well, what we did was sort of early on, I kind of gathered together a group of scholars and theater artists from across the country, and we would meet on Zoom every couple of weeks, and we reread the entire complete works of William Shakespeare with the mindset of looking for the plague in the plays and then just talking about the plays. And sort of parallel to that, I started meeting with some of the artists who are now involved in this play, people like A.J. Richardson and Sam Batanti and Brian Dout. At the time, Dakota Wellman was part of that group. And we were doing research and then just talking about what we were finding. And eventually, based on a couple of workshops with some other people who became involved, I then sat down and started writing. And I wrote the beginning of the play, brought it to the team. Rebecca, our director, came on board. We assembled the rest of the cast, the designers, and then we had more workshops. And from there, the play just continued to kind of take shape. And it was about me kind of taking what was happening in the room and then putting pen to paper. And so what you get is a kind of a premise that it's being created by five actors. And of course, those actors have a ton of input into what's happening. But there is a kind of, a writer behind it all. And that's me.
I'm just like, trying to understand how you have all these different hands involved and how complicated that must be. And of course, having a guiding hand behind us, putting it together is a big help, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It helps that, everyone involved has just been very, Rebecca is a big believer in yes, and that's kind of been a motto throughout that it's about, yeah, okay, great, love that. Let's figure out how that works in. And so there's been a really beautiful spirit of collaboration and complicity. And I think given this moment, one of the things that comes up a lot in the play is the idea of pivoting. And I almost have like a visceral response just saying that word, but that's, we've all had to just pivot so much over the past 2 years that, if theater artists can't make that into an art form, then I don't know who is expected to do it.
So well put. The Rebecca that you were referring to is Rebecca Gibeon, who is, I guess, kind of in a directorial capacity working on All Shall Be Well. Was that a good?
Yeah. She's directing the show. So I've written it, and I'm artistic director of the company, but she's directing the show. And we also have we've collaborated before. And so she's just an incredibly collaborative and really generous and graceful leader. And so it's a great energy to have in the project.
And she worked with you prior, a couple of years before the pandemic, Measure for Measure.
Yeah, that's right. She was assistant director on that show. And she's just become a co-artistic director of Persephone Productions with Layla. So they're running Persephone now, which is great.
That is Amanda Kellogg, Artistic Director of Repercussion Theatre, getting set to present All Shall Be Well, July 14th, touring for four weeks after that. The schedule is very intense. How do you, because you're like in a different place every single night for 4 weeks. How do you keep up?
Yeah, it's a lot of planning. It's a lot of preparation. It is intense. It's a huge beast, but thankfully there are people on the team, our technical director Adam, some of our actors, all of them except for Thomas and AJ have done the tour proper before. You know, it's really helpful to have people who kind of know what it is to be able to say to everyone else, it's okay. It looks intense, but we're all going to be okay. But yeah, they're long days. You know, the crew is there to set up at about, you know, noon or one. And by the time the actors arrive for mic check and fight call, and then the audience starts arriving, it's a big day for everybody. And but it's also really kind of magical. It's a beautiful way to get to know the city, actually, to discover parks that you might not get to know otherwise. And it's a really kind of amazing way to feel like, okay, I had a summer. You know how sometimes you get to the end of the summer and you think, man, I missed summer. You never feel that way when you work on a repercussion show. Think, nope, I remember every sunburn, every raindrop, every thunderstorm. I was there for all of it.
You feel it acutely because you've truly lived it.
Yes, absolutely.
I wanted to ask again about the script and just turn back to the story, because as we mentioned earlier, you're taking snippets not only from Shakespeare's plays, but also his sonnets and his songs. Sometimes we don't hear about those parts of his oeuvre as much. And the last time we spoke, we were actually talking about sonnets that your team had filmed in different locations around the island and put online. So you were moving away from the plays already and talking more about the romantic writing. So what should we look for in terms of sampling from Shakespeare's oeuvre?
Well, part of what was so fun about doing the show this way was, for me, it meant that I could dig into some of the works, like you're saying, that we don't normally do. You know, it's, of course, we do talk about Romeo and Juliet because Romeo and Juliet has one of the most overt moments of the plague being a plot point in all of the plays. But then there's also, you know, his minor epic poem, Venus and Adonis, which is in a way the first thing he writes when the plague shuts down the theaters in about 1592-93. And so there's something really fun about getting to tackle this stuff that we don't normally do at Shakespeare in the Park, including plays like King John and Richard II. I mean, there are some gems. There is some beautiful poetry and some beautiful text in some of the lesser produced plays. You know, one of the least produced plays is Pericles, Prince of Tyre, and there's two scenes from Pericles. I'm giving a lot away, but you know, I'm hoping people will forget by the time they come to see the show. But yeah, there's excerpts from plays that we would never normally do in Shakespeare in the Park summer, so that's really fun to get to dig into some of that really beautiful work.
It's kind of like a sampling, and it'll help you broaden a little bit of your reading, I think, of Shakespeare by getting away from the bigger plays we kind of know really well, right? To focus on the other gems.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, I've said to a couple of people that I feel like, I hope that this is the kind of play that if you already love Shakespeare, there will be really great stuff in there for you that you'll go, oh my God, this is just expanding my, you know, love of the Bard. And if you are not really that excited about Shakespeare, I hope there will still be really fun stuff in there for you that you'll be able to follow the story without necessarily you know, being in love with Shakespeare either.
And very briefly, if you have trouble with accessibility in terms of kind of being able to follow along and understand, you guys are again using an app that will allow you to follow along with the script kind of in real time. It's called Plank.
Yeah, so it's this digital company, Plank, that we've worked with now since 2016. It's awesome. They've created this web app where, yes, you can either follow along with the text in real time, in French or in English. But you can also, some people, what they do is they read it ahead of time. And that way they come and they can just sort of, you know, be present with the play. And sometimes people sort of catch up at intermission and go, what the heck was that about? You know, so there's different ways that people can use it. But yeah, it's a really cool tool that we're excited to be offering people again this year.
The play's the thing. I'm really excited to see this. And I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us about All Shall Be Well. Thanks so much, Amanda.
Thanks so much, Sarah.
That was Amanda Kellogg, Artistic Director of Repercussion Theater. She has written the upcoming show with input from members of her company. It's titled All Shall Be Well, and it is a collage of different parts of the Bard's canon that references the plague, which William Shakespeare lived through. It includes references to his plays, songs, and sonnets. The first show is a week from tonight, Thursday, July 14th, starting its tour in Dorval and then visiting parks everywhere from Warren Heights to Hudson to Stansted to NDG to Verdun, RDP, Plateau, Westmount, just to name a few locations. The final show is Saturday, August the 6th in the Plateau. Attendance is free, donations encouraged. Don't forget your blanket, your chair, your cushion, whatever you need. To plan your show and to find out more information, visit repercussiontheater.com. I'm Sarah DeA, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Twice a year, I get a press release from the Cool Foundation announcing a new round of grants awarded to local theater companies. This week, one of those emails popped up in my inbox, and I thought to myself, I'd like to know more about the people who give out cash to artists. So I decided to get Barry Cole on the line this week. He is president and chairman of the Cool Foundation. They award about $500,000 worth of grants to artists and theater companies every year in two rounds of funding. The first and latest round is back to the same amount they would be spending in pre-pandemic times. This time it comes out to $209,950 to be shared among 11 companies this upcoming theater season, with more funding thrown in for post-show talkbacks. The grantees this season will present art in a variety of genres, from drama to comedy to music, podcasts, videos, cooking, installation art, and dance, and more, telling stories from Indigenous creators from Innu, Inuit, Dene, Ulostequik, and Anishinaabe backgrounds, as well as other cultures like Jamaican and Chinese communities, and Quebec and Acadian folklore. While the overall goal of the Cole Foundation is to fund intercultural dialogue through the arts, the foundation's biggest focus is actually in healthcare research and treatment, a cause close to the heart of the foundation's original founder, Jack Cole. He retired as the vice chair of Woodgundy, which is a wealth management service with CIBC. Jack went on to found his charitable organization in 1980, and it depends on some $2 million in charity every year, according to recent numbers. Barry Cole is Jack's nephew. He continues his uncle's legacy today. We chatted earlier this week to talk about the importance of funding the arts in order to foster dialogue. I hope you'll find it interesting to go behind the scenes of what it means to hand money to artists. Welcome, Barry, to Upstage. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
How long have you been working with the Cole Foundation?
I started with the Cole Foundation in the late 1990s, as a member of the board. The foundation was set up by my uncle, Jack Cole, in 1980 when he retired from his business and he wanted something to do. And the idea of having a foundation was an important thing for him. The foundation was originally set up for pediatric oncology hematology, because my cousin had died from leukemia as a young woman. And so he wanted to put his money into that area. But he also had in the mandate a semicolon, and after the semicolon, it said, and anything else the board of directors sees fit to do as long as it can get a tax receipt. So that became my uncle's vision for philanthropy. And I call it shotgun philanthropy because it embraced everything that he was interested in. For example, he was panhandled by homeless men coming out of his office. And so he gave money to the Old Brewery Mission and the Salvation Army. He went to the Centaur Theater, so he gave money to Centaur Theater. He didn't go to the ballet, so the ballet didn't get any money. So his philanthropy was very idiosyncratic. and reflected his own visions of what should happen in Montreal. And mm-hmm. all his funding was dedicated to Montreal. After his death, I became the president of the foundation. And I said that we needed to have a policy because, you know, Centraide gives out over 360 grants to different social service agencies. And they're all important and they all are doing important work and good work. But how do you differentiate between them? And so we were looking for a question to solve. And at that time, the Bouchard-Taylor Commission was in session. And in their report, there was this wonderful sentence that said, the commissioners felt that Quebecers were not welcoming to the immigrants to the degree they should. And hence the immigrants were becoming ghettoized.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked the question, well, how do you break down the ghetto? How do you break down the silo? And how do you create a cosmopolitan society that embraces not just French and English cultures, but all kinds of cultures from other countries? And I recognized that theater was a way to do that, because theater is a story. And people will go to a play and hear a story, but then they can react to the nature of that story, the theme of that story, and broaden their horizons by having a story that reflects intercultural dialogue, different cultures, different ethnic groups telling their stories of their experiences. And so we use theater as a vehicle to try to combat racism, to combat prejudice, and to create a more harmonious society in Montreal. That was the idea behind it.
Were you invested, or I mean, I guess like emotionally invested, or were you someone who was always a theater person before you kind of came to this line in this commission report and kind of decided that the arts were something you're going to focus on?
My career has been in performing arts management mm-hmm. for my whole life, but mostly in classical music. But I have worked in theater, and so I recognize that music, contemporary music, is international in style, and it's hard to tell a Polish composer from a South African composer by the style of his music. But in theater, you have the story, and so you can tell that you have a story that is based on a culture. And so theater was the proper vehicle to use to try to create a more cosmopolitan society.
That is the voice of Barry Cole, who was president and chairman of the Cole Foundation. And as I mentioned, every couple of months, I see the work that the Cole Foundation is doing. I get a little press release about the money being given out. And I kind of thought this week, why not talk to the person holding the purse strings, or ostensibly holding the purse strings? And that is Barry, with the work he's doing with the Cole Foundation. Are you only supporting, is your main focus artistic endeavors right now, or do you still kind of have that shotgun philosophy where you might be helping out different sectors and different charities as your uncle had started out doing?
No, we are highly focused. We spend about $2 million a year in Montreal, and 60% of it goes into the medical issues of pediatric young adult leukemia and lymphoma research and patient care.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of it goes into the cultural program. So we're spending about $500,000, $400,000 on the theater program, and the rest is in medicine.
So when it comes to the arts funding, what might that mean for an individual company who applies and receives the funding? Like, what difference does that make for them and their bottom line?
It makes a great deal of difference, because we are having companies come to us every year, and we'll give out a grant of up to $25,000 for a production, up to $10,000 for a commission or a translation. And so these are critical components of the budget that we see from every theater company.
And do they have discretion to do whatever they like with the funding, or do they have to fulfill specific things like paying for parts of a production, or for hiring, or for development of a new play?
No, they just add this to their budget. If it's a commission, of course, that's a direct payment to an artist to write a play. and for workshops to fix the play up or to improve the quality of the play through having a public workshop. The same with commissioning. The money goes to the same with translation. The person doing the translation gets a stipend or an honorarium from that money. And then extra money goes into workshops of having the translation read in a workshop situation.
And are you looking for anything specific when companies apply for that funding? What stands out to you in terms of, you know, who gets the green light?
Well, who gets the green light is based on a jury's decision. We hire professional theater people from Montreal who are totally bilingual because we're treating French and English applications at the same time. We ask for the jury to comment on the degree of intercultural conversation in the work that it wants to present. And then we look at the quality of the company, the timetable when it wants to do it, the budget that it's presenting to us. So we're looking at a number of factors, but the most important one is really the nature of the story and how important that story is for a public to experience.
I'm kind of curious to know what you look for as a theater goer, as a, not an audience member, separate from the funding and the work that people do. What do you look for when you're going out to theater?
Oh, well, I like thoughtful plays, ones that are going to challenge me, ones that are going to make me think about issues. I'm not a great one for fluff or comedy. I really want something serious. That's Barry.
Something to sink your teeth into.
That's right. I want something to challenge me, because theater gives you the experience of intimacy of situations which you don't normally have in your own private life. Your next door neighbor really doesn't talk about seeing the significant issues in his life, but when you go to a play, you'll see the significant issues of a character. And that's what I enjoy doing. And that's why I like to go to theater.
You have awarded grants for the spring session, or I guess the spring round of funding, 11 different companies in and around Montreal, just under $210,000. And that is for work that will be coming up in the coming theater season, starting in the fall. So what is there an overall theme of the latest round of funding in terms of who you are supporting?
No, there's no theme of who we're supporting. We are supporting companies that have been in Montreal for some time, that have really embraced the idea of having an intercultural play in their season. And so we're seeing the companies come back time and time again. Companies like Centaur Theatre, companies like Infinite Theatre, the Jean Duceppe Company, Théâtre aux Écuries, a Talisman. These are companies that come back to us regularly that really want to foster this discussion within the Montreal community. So we're very pleased with this, because what it shows is that the idea of this issue of different cultures speaking to the audiences is becoming accepted by artistic directors. And that is really the impact that we've had, is changing the whole flavor of the Montreal's theater season.
That is the voice of Barry Cole. He is president and chairman of the Cole Foundation. We're talking about funding, providing grants for theater companies. You just named a whole bunch of them right there. The funding that goes towards producing works, we're focusing particularly on the upcoming theater season starting in the fall, which will hopefully be a kind of more normal theater season compared to the last two that we've lived through. You also early on referenced, you know, you're concerned about communities kind of being in silos and maybe not integrating as well, and kind of taking those conversations, fostering them, but bringing them to a wider audience so we can kind of get to know each other better. And you used the word of the example of neighbor, knowing your neighbor, just a couple of moments ago. What kind of groups, what kind of backgrounds are you hearing from in terms of the artists that you're supporting?
What kind of backgrounds?
Or like, Ooh. Are you seeing more diversity, different, like people coming from different communities that are applying for grants?
The theater companies are either senior French companies or Anglophone companies. What we're seeing is that they are choosing a variety of plays this year, and the jury, we were pleased to see that there were a number of First Nations issues being discussed. We have theater companies that are in the First Nations community, and we have other companies like Centaur Theater hiring a First Nations artist in residence who's creating a play. So this crop of grants that we've just given out has a large First Nations general theme to it, which is very pleasing to see, because it's all part of the grants of reconciliation that we're trying to achieve with the First Nations community across the country. And theater is a very potent way to start helping to develop the dialogue between the various communities.
Very well said. Barry, when you think back on the work that your uncle started back in 1980 and the work that you're doing today, do you think he'd be proud of what you're continuing to do in his name?
I think he'd be very proud. At the same time, I recognize that he probably wouldn't recognize what we're doing. In the medical side, he was very interested in funding equipment for different labs to continue their research. And we don't fund equipment at all now. We fund people. So we've been supporting researchers personally to continue their research or to start their research. On the theater side, he supported the Centaur Theater, for example, but we are embracing all of Montreal's theater, both French and English. And so it's an expanded program far beyond what he would have done. And we have to recognize that we are spending more money than he was spending back in the 80s. So this gives us the ability to expand the program as it has been realized.
Are you proud of the work that you do here?
Oh, yes. Yes. This is one of the most rewarding jobs I've ever had in my life. To be able to give someone some money to realize their dream is just a wonderful experience to have.
Yeah, you are kind of like a dream maker of sorts. You give people the seed money they need to start something.
And our board is very, very supportive of this activity that we do. So it's not just a Barry idea. It's a whole board idea of how we do things and where we fund.
Well, Barry Cole, thank you so much for pulling back the curtain a little bit to understand how this money kind of gets distributed and goes to supporting the companies that we love to see and support. It's much appreciated.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure talking with you.
That was Barry Cole, the president and chairman of the Cole Foundation, which supports not only intercultural dialogue through grants to Montreal theater companies and artists, but also supports research and patient care in pediatric and young adult leukemia and lymphomas. The latest round of theater grants was announced this week, and they include Théâtre aux Écuries, Talisman Theater, Centaur and Talking Treaties, Infinite Theater, and more. The deadline to apply for the second round of grants this year is Friday, September 30th at 5 o'clock. For more information on the foundation and to apply for a grant yourself, you can visit colefoundation.ca. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. Tonight you heard Carmen Ruiz of Creation Virago on her new circus show, Barca, for Maria Complètement Silk, on now at La Tohu until July 17th. Repercussion Theatre's artistic director, Amanda Kellogg, her new show is All Shall Be Well. It starts touring July 14th in Dorval and continues for 4 weeks. And also you met Barry Cole of the Cole Foundation on the work it takes to dispense some $500,000 in funding to theatre companies every year. A very big thank you to my guests. You can hear past episodes of Upstage at ckut.ca under the archives. Thank you to Jack Soler, our spoken word coordinator, for making sure this show gets to air. And thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah DeAy. Speak with you next time on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at ckut.ca. Have fun. Stay safe. Up next is Grey Matters.
Cinema Politica is thrilled to announce the theatrical release of Dear Jackie, a feature documentary by Henri Pardot. The film opens on June 17 in 4 theaters in Montreal: Cinéma Public, Cinéma du Musée, Cinémathèque Québécoise, and Cinéma Moderne, with the director and special guest in attendance at select screenings. Dear Jackie poetically tells the story of one of the oldest Black communities in Canada, Montreal's Little Burgundy, by way of a cinematic letter to Jackie Robinson, the first Black man to break the color barrier in professional baseball. It also masterfully connects history to the present by challenging the myth of a post-racial society. This release is co-presented by Desta Black Youth Network, Tyndale St. George's Community Center, Canteen Bergs, and Makisia Solo. For more information and tickets, visit cinemapolitica.org. We hope to see you there. This is a CKUT co-presentation.
Good evening and welcome to the July 7th edition of Grey Matters. Tonight on the show, we have a lecture from Alternative Radio entitled Causes and Consequences of the Ukraine War. It was recorded in Florence, Italy on June 16th, a couple weeks ago. The lecturer tonight is John Mearsheimer. He is the R. Wendell Harrison Distinguished Service Professor in the Political Science Department of the University of Chicago. He is author of numerous books, including Why Leaders Lie, The Great Delusion, and the co-author of The Israel Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy. So, without further ado, here's tonight's lecture, Causes and Consequences of the Ukraine War, by John Mearsheimer.
The tragic truth is that if the West had not pursued NATO expansion into Ukraine, it is unlikely there would be a war in Ukraine today. In essence, Washington played the central role in leading Ukraine down the path to destruction. History will judge the United States and the